SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Where to begin? We begin with the beginning here on The Secrets of the Hobbit. Welcome back to a new episode. It's a new week in New Zealand, a new week in Los Angeles, and a new week in Holland, the Netherlands, which is where I am. In Los Angeles, and unfortunately the both of us are not in New Zealand, but in Los Angeles is joining me today, Dave Cale. Hey, good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Father, and I'm so happy to be able to say that I'm back in Los Angeles and not someplace else.
Yes, because you were on the road, and when you're finally back at the microphone in your comfy home. Although it's always a little bit early when we record this, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's not bad.
What do you do to wake up? Do you just drink lots of coffee, or do you have some special Hobbit recipe?
I don't know. You know, usually it's kind of interesting. It's a little bit easier to wake up these mornings than it is other mornings because I'm psyched to do the podcast.
Wow. You just say that for me, right? I'm not really a very good early in the morning. I usually start to wake up around second breakfast, which is around 10 o'clock. And, you know, I fall asleep again after first lunch, and then second lunch I'm gone. And I'm recording usually this at pre-dinner. And then, you know, I usually pass out right after recording the show. But we're not the only people that are tired. We commented last week that Peter Jackson looked pretty exhausted after, you know, the months of shooting that he's already done. And he's not done yet. There's still a couple of hundred days left for him to work on the actual production. And then, of course, you've got the exhausting post-production phase, which is perhaps even worse for a director because he needs to sit at all these editing sessions and supervise the post-production special effects, etc. So it's a this man is really wearing himself out, and we got to admire his tenacity to do these two movies, even though he knew what he was in for, having filmed, of course, the whole trilogy. But he seemed to imply in the interview that this time it was at least as fatiguing as it was shooting the trilogy, and perhaps even more fatiguing. And so we got some feedback on that, some comments from one of our listeners, Jonathan, and he writes, one reason Peter may not have sounded particularly enthusiastic during his interview is that being almost 100 days into filming, he probably is exhausted. I seem to remember from watching some of the extras on the Lord of the Rings DVDs that he barely slept during the 200-plus day shoot. And any time he was editing rather than shooting the films, he was crashed out on a sofa, absolutely shattered. So, yes, it is an exhausting process. And again, he wasn't even planning on filming these two movies. He wanted to hire another director. Guillermo del Toro was originally scheduled to do these two productions, but he had to bail out basically because of all the delays, and he had other plans. And so Peter Jackson decided to take the helm. Personally, I still think it is It's the best thing that could happen to us because I do trust Peter Jackson's vision. I like Guillermo del Toro and I admire some of the movies that he did. But again, it's not Peter Jackson. And I think that Jackson has his personal take on this. He's great with actors and he understands the story so well. And so I trust him being involved in the process of directing. I also really like that he is working with actors like Evangeline Lilly, who we talked about last time, and that he actually wrote her part and now also gets to direct her. I think it is definitely the best director that we can wish for. But again, the poor man. I don't envy him. I would not like to take his place. So let's take a look at what's happening in the world of Middle-earth.
Get down. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't turn me in anything unnatural.
A lot of journalists are trying to eavesdrop on phone calls and trying to find out what is happening where. And especially New Zealand journalists are, of course, eager to report on the shooting process, especially now that they are leaving the studios and are going to film actually in various parts of New Zealand. And I think our first story, Dave, is related to that, isn't it? Some people were on the lookout for hobbits.
Yep, that's right. The Waikato Times is, I think they have sort of an approximate idea of where the shooting's going to take place. Mm-hmm. And so I think their intrepid reporters just sort of fan out and make phone calls and drop in on people and say, hey, you know, we heard rumblings that the Hobbit cast or crew is coming here. You see anything? And so in Te Kuiti, and, you know, if I got that wrong, I apologize many times over. They apparently there's several motels and hotels and lodgings and other things that have been booked up, and that it's pretty clear that the folks that have booked it are affiliated with the Hobbit production. But all of the folks that they tried to talk to are very tight-lipped. So they said in the article at the Waikato Times, a contact at Panorama Motor Inn, 59 Awakino Road, was cautious. I don't know if I'm allowed to tell you, she said softly before spilling the beans. They're not here yet. I can tell you we'll have a couple on October 20, but you did not hear that from me. On the 30th, we're booked out with them. Motel Te Kuiti already has crew crashing in its beds after a bunch rocked up on Monday. Caves Motor Inn proved tough to squeeze information from. Are they expecting a flood of little people? No, the woman said sternly, before a laugh forced through her steely resolve. She needed a second opinion. It's the Waikato time, she whispered, wanting to know if we have any hobbits in the moment. It's confidential, isn't it? It is, apparently. Waitomo Lodge Motel opposite Bosco Cafe would neither confirm or deny Hobbit arrivals. I'm not at liberty to say anything about the Hobbits, I'm sorry. These lodgings and inns, these employees are really, really bad at not answering questions, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
even that last one, I'm not at liberty to say anything about the Hobbits. You basically just confirm there's Hobbits.
Exactly, especially if you try to cover the mouthpiece of your phone and the journalist can still hear you talk. It's confidential, isn't it? Should I have been talking about this? Oh, well. But, you know, this could be problematic for the actual production, because imagine if there are lots of fans in the area that want to break the news and try to make photos of these actors. You can imagine that they, especially because they're out in the open, you don't want fans to just all of a sudden climb in trees and mess up your actual filmings. You know, like people would do anything to be in The Hobbit, and including, you know, hiding themselves in the area and then popping up right when you do your final take, you know. So I guess that there's a very good reason for the production to try to keep this as secret as possible. And of course, it's not about the story. This is not the kind of secrecy that we know from other productions where they don't want the plot to leak out because someone else might make a similar movie. We all know what the story is going to be about, but this is just probably to be able to film in peace. But do we know what this area is actually, where this is located, and what they might be shooting here? This is not Mata Mata, is it?
I don't think so. I'm not quite sure where this area is, so I'm pulling up some information. It's a small town in the south of the Waikato region of the North Island of New Zealand.
Oh, in the north. So. Interesting. So that would be the same area, perhaps, where they filmed The Shire. Actually, I'm looking at the map here on Wikipedia, and it is definitely in the same area, as far as I can tell, as The Hobbit, as the Shire with the Hobbits. And so it's kind of a rural area with lots of green hills, and so this could be another location. I'm just trying to think of what they could film there. It's just green hills. Might as well be just parts of, around the Shire.
Yeah. There's no mountains nearby. There's really no large bodies of water. I mean, you know, they're within driving distance of the coast. But I would think if they were going to use the coast, they would be at the coast.
Well, and then they talk about hobbits in plural. So
exactly. Yep.
This might just be stuff from the begin, from the start of the movie, or the return. Who knows? But it seems unlikely to me that they would film scenes that actually take place, you know, in a Shire-like environment, because then you'd need to install all sorts of set pieces, and so I don't know. Or it might be just kind of be shots, very simple footage of the well, it's not called the Fellowship, but the dwarves and Bilbo just walking through random hills, you know, filler stuff.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Maybe it was scenes for the very early part of the journey.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to try to find some more information for next week, and perhaps some of our Kiwi contacts might be able to help us out here and do some research and give us some clues as to what they might be filming in that area. But it's interesting. It's Northern Ireland. If this is at all true, because again, this is just based on rumors and whispers, so it's not really very reliable information to begin with. Then, of course, we've got the music that we all know and love from The Hobbit. Howard Shore did an interview about his upcoming Lord of the Rings tour, right?
Yeah, he did, over at our friends at theonering.net. Because there's this tour called Fellowship of the Ring Concert Tour, of course, it's actually the Lord of the Rings in Concert is the name of the tour. And if you're interested, go to lordoftheringsinconcert.com and you can learn more about it. In fact, they're actually in my area this weekend, but unfortunately I'm out of town, so I can't go.
Oh,
which I'm kind of bummed about. Yeah, Anaheim, October 15th. Dang it!
And it's so it's a performance of the music. Kind of he himself, of course, composed this over a long time, and at one point there was this performance of parts of his score, and he went actually to listen, and he was wowed by his own music. He's like, I've never heard it in this whole, you know, in the context of this entire concert performance. And so he decided to actually work with the director, I think, and to add movie footage to the music, and that's currently it's kind of an audio visual experience, basically, this concert. It's not just an orchestra playing, but you will actually be plunged into the visual world of Middle-earth as well. And
you know, I'm thinking, reading through it again, I think the way they're not only are they using footage, I think they might actually be playing the full film and doing the music along with it.
Oh boy! So just like these old black and white movies in the olden days, where a guy would just sit at a piano and he would watch the movie and play along. Interesting. Wow. Can you imagine the impact? And so they need to have a version of the movie without music, I guess, in order to, or would they just be playbacking? Probably not. Just faking it.
Yeah. They're just going to play the movie, and all the people are going to sit in the orchestra pit just moving their instruments.
I would love to be there, though. What a great experience that must be, to hear a live concert with, you know, the visual stuff. Fantastic.
So there are a few Hobbit tidbits at the bottom. They ask him how things are going with the Hobbit. He says, we're just in the middle of the work. We will have a lot more to talk about a little further on, but we're really getting into the middle of it now. And they said, can we look forward to a Hobbit score performed live at the film someday? And he says, I guess we will have to see how everything progresses. So not a lot, just some hints, but yes, he's working. Well, it's good to know.
He's in the middle of it now, so he definitely must be composing. Since the screenplay, or how do you call that, like the final version of the script, must be there. And so they've planned all the sequences. They know how these movies will be, at least in kind of a rough strokes. They must know how these movies, how long they will be, and the sequence of events. They know the dialogue. And so that is probably enough for a composer to start just working. He doesn't need to see the final footage in order to do his work. He probably has a pretty good idea how what he is composing to. And then in the final process, they will bring him in probably to do last minute patchwork, basically, because a movie will never be exactly the way you plan it, in especially in the editing process. They might change a lot of things. But then for a composer, the challenge is to be there and to supervise the final process, because you ideally, of course, want to make sure that every music that is used in the movie is actually has been written for that particular scene. And what happens a lot, especially in cheaper productions, is that a composer will just compose a lot of music, but then the editors will actually go in and sometimes remove parts of it and make sure that the music fits underneath the images. But that is sometimes a very frustrating process for composers, because they feel like, well, these editors shouldn't meddle with our work. You know, it's not their. You compose something not just from the perspective of it being just kind of background music to the action. You want it to be actual music, and you cannot just remove parts of a composition without really harming the final balance of the piece.
Right. They're telling a story with music as much as the filmmakers are telling a story with what's on screen, or the screenwriters are telling with the thing, you know, and if you chop it up, you start affecting the narrative.
Well, yes, the musical narrative. And mm-hmm. But this happened quite a bit, and that's always when you see these special editions of the soundtrack, where you will have lots of added material that was composed for the movie but had to be performed differently, or we saw an abbreviated version. And it's very rare that the things that someone composed really end up in the final version. There is always some cutting and some disfiguring going on. So but I think he's pretty much available for the entire production. So I guess he will work with Peter Jackson in the final editing also to kind of fine tune and tweak it.
Yeah, I think for these films, they really seem to do things kind of a little bit differently. You know, everybody is a little bit more involved than they might be on other productions, and I imagine, especially for The Hobbit, all of the people, the big name people, Peter Jackson, Fran Walsh, Howard Shore, all get probably have even more leeway this time around, since they've proven themselves, and people are like, well, we know that this will be it. These people do great work. We know it'll be a hit. So we should just sort of let them do their thing, and then it will be great.
Absolutely. And but then again, what happens afterwards with your music, you don't really control. And we've seen the music by Howard Shore being used in games and in all sorts mm-hmm. of documentaries and behind-the-scenes stuff. And so in a way, it's always must be very difficult to compose something and then let it go. So that's probably one of the reasons that he loves these concerts, because then he's in full control again, and he can make sure that the audience will have the most perfect experience, because there's no editor involved who's going to butcher your score. And in games, particularly, it is it's kind of annoying what they sometimes do, because they just treat music as background music. And I remember, especially the games based on franchises like Star Wars, they will just take John Williams' music and use it in a totally different way than what it was composed for. They will just use themes that were composed for Princess Leia scenes, and they will just use that in any, you know, a totally different part of the game that has nothing to do with Leia, thereby completely breaking the internal balance of the composition. And it's just because, you know, the musician has a very specific idea in mind when he composes, especially Howard Shore has said, you know, he composes in themes, and he wants there to be even like coherence between what he's currently composing and then the Lord of the Rings score. So he's probably going to use themes that we already know and modify them a little bit just to, you know, create all these little bridges between the two compositions. Can't wait to hear a little bit of it. I hope that there will be a trailer at one point, like some footage, and then I just want to hear a bit of the new score. I'm just craving a glimpse of The Hobbit. Which ties us actually to the ties into the next story that I would like to talk about. So apparently, there's this story about a bag that was distributed during a film festival, and there might have been a viewing of some Hobbit material.
Yep, it's basically it's a television trade show that was held in Cannes about a week ago, a little over a week ago, October 3rd through 6th. And it turns out that at this, they were giving out a gift bag with an image of Martin Freeman as Bilbo on it. It looks kind of similar. I mean, I can't decide if people are getting worked up over nothing, because this looks very similar to one of the promotional images that they released. This picture of Bilbo looking at, I think, probably reading the contract that the dwarves wrote for him. And I'm pretty sure we've seen this image before.
I think so too. I think it came from the photos that were used for that film magazine, that UK film magazine.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think so. It's a very cool bag. I'd love to have one. But so anyway, but there's also a rumor, and that bag was trademarked by New Line Cinema and MGM. Mm-hmm. But there's also a rumor that a few minutes of footage from The Hobbit were screened. So this is just a large trade show. It takes place in Cannes, France, every year. There's around 12,000 industry people there, from TV and film and digital content production, et cetera, et cetera. There's no press there. Everyone who attended would have signed confidentiality agreements. It's pretty tough to get any more information about this. There's only just this rumor, but at least the people who wrote the article at The One Ring seem really confident that some footage was aired. But I don't think there's any way for us to actually know.
And then, of course, this story immediately was picked up by all sorts of other newspapers. I'm currently reading an Italian website where they took this little tidbit and turned it into a story. And that's usually – you have to be careful with all these rumors, because it might be just speculation in one article. And a few copies later of the news, it will become fact. And it's like, well, do you know that there's been a secret screening in Cannes in France? And it's you got this rumor mill, and it's very hard to control.
Yep, I'm flipping through some of the other stuff too, and you're right. It's definitely taking off. The story is spreading like wildfire.
And you can be sure that those tote bags, if they are on eBay, they're gonna make the owners a fortune. Who doesn't want to have a cool bag like that? Totally cool.
Yeah, I agree.
I found an interesting other article here on Movies World, it's an article. I don't think it's in our notes for today's episode, but it is about the character Toriel, played by Evangeline Lilly, and we speculated about her character last episode. Mm-hmm. And about the interview that she gave to Access Hollywood, that she was so scared because of the fact that her character does not exist. It's not an official character from the Tolkien canon, but it's made up by Peter Jackson. And so she was confident, but she was, of course, also very worried about the backlash that it could get if it's not well received by these angry, fanatic Tolkien fans that we all are. And what I like is that this article contains some interesting speculation, but it's kind of informed speculation. So I'm just going to quickly read through this. I didn't prepare this, but I just stumbled upon it. And this is kind of part of what we do here on the show, is like, well, we also want to provide you with some background about what could potentially be part of the story. Let's see. So we there is plenty of footage of Liv Taylor. So this is all about Liv Taylor's character, which was also enhanced considerably for the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Lily is right to be scared because of fan backlash. Can have career ramifications, even if it's not her fault. Her character's invented, and Jackson didn't bring her in to deliver a few lines and look woodsy. He and his co-writers, Guillermo de Toro, is quoted here as a co-writer. Did he really contribute to the screenplay? I didn't remember that.
I think minimally at this point, I imagine that he's, because he's not continuing to work on it. I think he worked on it some at first and was instrumental in sort of defining the original vision, but I'm sure his contributions are. I'm guessing that the Screenwriters Guild rules probably require him to be cited as one.
Okay. Yeah. Because he did do some work on it. So mm-hmm. It's Peter Jackson and Fran Walsh and Philippa Boyens. And perhaps a little bit of Guillermo del Toro. They had plans for her character. Otherwise, a big-name actress with a baggage of Lost and a romantic past with former Hobbit Dominic Monaghan wouldn't be part of the proceedings. That's true, actually. She was she had a long-term relationship with Dominic. It ended at one point. I don't know. Just right after Lost, I think. But they lived together on Hawaii for a couple of years. Speculation about what her role might be has ranged from her efforts as a princess warrior in Mirkwood to perhaps one of the captors of the dwarves. And then the writer of the article has his own pet theory, suggesting that she will be sympathetic to a locked-up Bilbo Baggins and take on some sort of role as a jailer and play a part in the barrel escape. All of this only lends gravitas to her appearance at the Battle of Five Armies, where we will recognize her and empathize immediately. While I wouldn't call myself a purist, her whole presence is a bit troubling. Just as Arwen showed up in the Lord of the Rings films to rescue Frodo after the flight to the fort, I fear that Lily's Toriel could end up robbing Bilbo of his own character-defining moment. Actually, I think that's not a... Oops, sorry. Messing up my studio here. It's not a bad guess, actually, that she is involved somehow in the liberation of Bilbo and the dwarves. Because wasn't there a quote last week that kind of hinted to her involvement in those prison scene passages? And then I like the speculation that we will see her later on in the battle and that you will actually have someone to relate to, or some people that have been introduced before and that we can relate to, and it could be her, could be other elven characters that we might know from the Lord of the Rings. I don't know. What do you think? Are the chances that we will see some other elves?
Well, if you recall last week, the reason we were speculating about that was that in the Elvish that she quoted, one mm-hmm. of the quotes had something to do with they are empty or they're gone or something. But it's something that only really would have fit for the Elven jailer pointing out that the dwarves had escaped. So mm-hmm. So I think that's a pretty good bet that she's involved in that somehow. I don't know if she's actually the guard or whether she is like some high ranking official that went down to check on them or something. But I do kind of agree with his concern a little bit, or at least his comment about Arwen, comparing her to Arwen. Mm-hmm. The part of Fellowship of the Ring that always bothered me about Arwen more than just about anything else. I mean, I was bummed that they took out Glorfindel because I loved Glorfindel and I kind of wanted to see him on screen. But the part that bothered me more was the fact that the scene at the Ford is a really powerful character moment for Frodo, because this is where he defies the Witch King, mm-hmm. even though he has the he's falling under their influence because of the shard of the Nazgul blade that was left inside him. And so at the Ford, after he meets up with Glorfindel, Glorfindel. Glorfindel puts Frodo on his horse, sends him on his way. And so at the ford, Frodo defies them, you know, by himself. Whereas in the film, he's kind of almost comatose at that point, and Arwen rescues him, basically. And that part always bothered me a little bit, because it kind of takes away a little bit from Frodo's character development. And so I see what he's saying here, that what he hopes he doesn't see, and I would agree with this, is you know, Peter Jackson doing the same thing here, saying, I want to have a strong female character who has a great action moment, so I'll have her swoop in and rescue Bilbo at some point.
Uh-huh. And then Bilbo actually
I don't have a problem with that. Less credit. But if they do it at a moment, if they take some key moment of the book where Bilbo himself does some great heroic act, and they replace it with Tauriel riding in that from some off screen to save him, that'll be a bit of a bummer.
Yeah. By the way, the writer of the article is Larry Curtis. He's part of the team at theonering.net, but apparently he's also writing for some other websites. And there's another tidbit here that I think is interesting. Let me see. He writes, we know Jackson's writing team doesn't introduce a character without purpose, conflict, and, if they are significant enough, a character arc. Tauriel is there to either oppose Thorin and company or oppose her own elven kingdom of Thranduil and Prince Legolas and their imprisonment of strangers in the ever-darker Mirkwood Forest. And that answers the question posed 800 words ago, like, why is she there? That is why there is a Tauriel. The writing team felt another character was needed to enhance the conflict in the bit of elves versus dwarves and Bilbo. And of course, to put another female in a male-heavy cast, actually, that could be interesting. If she doesn't agree with the foreigner policy of her own elven kingdom, that could be interesting. That definitely would introduce some conflict, like the kind of just to show that the elves are not all thinking along the same lines, and that there is dissent among the elves, and that most of them are very rude towards dwarves, and then she might actually, I don't know, perhaps she's had a fling with a dwarf in the past. Who knows?
Well, I'm fine with her character because there aren't very many well-developed wood elf characters in The Hobbit. Basically, there's the Elven King, and then that's it.
Yeah.
And there's also kind of the butler and the jailer a little bit, but really the only one we really get to learn anything about in earnest is the Elven King. And so I think it's great that they're adding some characters, giving them names, giving them, you know, scenes and story so that we can learn about them and actually get to know some wood elves.
I think it would make the wood elves a much more believable part of the story also. And again, it's, you know, you have to make the transition from, let's say, a children's story to something that is believable on the big screen and something that can be believable for two movies. And if these wood elves are going to be involved later on in a battle, then it makes sense that we actually get to know them a little bit more in the first movie. And I kind of dig this idea of Tauriel being an elf that kind of stands up to her own people in a certain way, or at least to some of the ways that they treat the dwarves, and perhaps their their hatred towards dwarves. And so that could indeed bring a lot of relief to the story. And it you need a role that is worth the effort in a way, because Evangeline Lilly is a well-known actress, and she definitely has a good reputation among all the Lost fans. And so you don't want to have her just, you know, that was kind of my problem with Arwen. I was like, well, what does she really contribute to the story? It was so bland. And then even the way that her performance was so kind of stereotypical, elvish, kind of low voice and looking pretty. But I'm longing for an elf, a female elf that has a little bit more, I don't know, more spunk, more energy. Just to break the cliche in a little bit, and I thought that Arwen's role was, I don't know, it just never really worked for me.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly interesting, was it?
But it's probably also the actress, and I don't know, it's a combination. Although her elvish pronunciation, I have to stress it again, was near perfect. She did a tremendous job, but the rest was kind of, I don't know. You kind of wish that Aragorn
would have better taste in picking his companion or his I don't know. Oh, perhaps. Perhaps I mean I shouldn't be giving relational advice to Aragorn, being a priest and all. What do I know? But anyway, so definitely recommend our listeners to read this article. We'll link to it in our show notes on thehobbit.sqpn.com. Let's take a short break here.
There and back again, A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back, wander the paths of Mirkwood, visit Lake Town, see the Lonely Mountain again. But age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
We are able to bring you this show thanks to our affiliation with the Amazon store. SQPN is an Amazon affiliate, which means that if you want to shop at Amazon, there is a way that you can support the cost that we have to bring you these shows every week, our hosting costs, the website, the bandwidth that we need for the storage of the podcasts. And it's very simple. It won't cost you a dime, actually. You can just go to our website, sqpn.com, or to our subsite, thehobbit.sqpn.com. And on those websites, you will see a link to the Amazon store. And if you click on that link and then do your shopping, Amazon will actually share a little bit of the profit that they would normally keep for themselves with SQPN. And in that way, we are able to finance our recurring costs for the, especially for the storage of the podcast and the actual bandwidth. So again, think of us if you're going to shop for Christmas or for Thanksgiving or a birthday, or you just want to get the new Kindles. You could help us out tremendously by first going to sqpn.com, clicking on the affiliate link to the Amazon store, and then do your shopping. It's I know it requires a little bit of thinking, but hey, if you want to help us out, this is the way that you can do it. Back to the show. What else is new?
There was a BBC radio interview with Andy Serkis recently.
Cool.
Which is pretty interesting. It doesn't get a lot into Hobbit news, so I don't know if we actually want to listen to it. But it's mostly just talking about motion capture technology and his role in Planet of the Rise of the Planet of the Apes and right. That kind of stuff. So
still haven't seen that movie. Have you seen it?
The no, I haven't.
Ape movie. I think it's coming out on Blu-ray or DVD anytime now. Right?
Yeah, it is. It is. So cool. I guess we probably should watch it and support Andy
and have something to talk about as well.
That's right.
Cool. So I'm surprised actually that he's doing interviews, because he should be working full time right now on The Hobbit.
That's right. What does he think he's doing, taking time away from the production to do these interviews about the rest of his career?
Could be part of his contract. But he's second unit director. Although I think that in his earlier interviews he seemed to imply that a lot of his Gollum stuff was already done, and they probably moved all that to the beginning. It was the first phase of shooting where they did the riddle game and everything, and that's probably a very good idea, because then he can focus totally on second unit direction. And you don't want to kind of switch between the two and do all the motion capture and then the next day do second unit direction, because it's two totally different animals. And another reason to move that all the way to the beginning of the production is that then that will give a lot of time to the Weta Studios to actually start working on the whole, you know, animation of his character and the special effects. I mean, this is again, they're probably going to surpass themselves in the way that they portray Gollum. And so the earlier they can start working on that, the better it is, especially because it involves interaction with Bilbo. So you're talking about iconic scenes, and they want to make sure that these scenes look really good, because you can be sure that the riddle game will be in every single trailer that we're going to see, because it's so pivotal to tie the franchise of The Hobbit to the franchise of The Lord of the Rings. And so just like
Tolkien had to work hard at bringing these books together and making sure that the readers of The Hobbit actually would connect to The Lord of the Rings in the same way Peter Jackson needs to do that for his movies, because it might be very well known to us as Hobbit fans and Tolkien fans that these two stories are related. I bet you that there are quite a few people out there that have no idea that the Lord of the Rings has something to do with The Hobbit. And then we'll just see this, the movie posters, and I was like, oh, what is this? So you need to make sure that people want to see this, because it's the prequel to The Lord of the Rings. If you love The Lord of the Rings, you gotta look at The Hobbit, and so you want Gollum in there, you want the ring to be in there. And so I guess that they're working hard on those Gollum scenes right now.
Oh yeah, I bet. And it's so funny because it's going to be such a small part of the film. Although maybe in terms of actual time on screen, maybe they'll play out the full scene and really get into the riddles like you were saying. But it's one chapter in the story this time around,
yes.
Whereas Gollum's a central character in Lord of the Rings.
Well, and don't you think that they might actually enhance Gollum's scenes a little bit more as well?
Just I'm still kind of curious. I'm kind of wondering if there's the possibility that they might just write him into other parts of the story.
That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm thinking. They almost have to. You gotta
to be very careful about how they do it, because that would really alter the because if they did write him into later scenes, basically what they're starting to do is hint at the nature of the ring.
Yes.
Which really could kind of alter the character of the film. So they have to be very careful. But I have a I think you're right. I have a suspicion they're going to do that or try.
Well, and we have this whole – and we talked about this before. There is this genius thing that Tolkien did in basically kind of rewriting history in The Lord of the Rings, hinting at the fact that the possession of the ring by Bilbo actually changed his – account of the events during the Riddle
mm-hmm.
game, and that
That's right.
he has been lying about the way that it actually happened, and of course I think it was brilliant what Tolkien did there, because originally he had no plans for the whole Lord of the Rings thing and the evil ring, so he needed to find a good reason why it wasn't mentioned by Bilbo before. And so he actually hints that was the corrupting power of the ring that made Bilbo actually embellish his own story and his own role in getting the ring and the way that he treated Gollum. So, again, I'm so curious to see if and how they will do this in the movie. But I kind of think that you need Gollum not only in the Riddle game, but you need him in the second movie as well. Again, even if it's only for PR reasons, you know, you can't do a trailer for the second part of The Hobbit if Gollum is not there. So I don't know. Do we actually know what happened to Gollum after he lost the ring to Bilbo? Is there backstory? And I don't know.
Yep. Gandalf and Aragorn unravel a lot of Gollum's backstory during sort of the time leading up to The Lord of the Rings. And even just in the time frame of The Lord of the Rings, from between the time that Frodo leaves the Shire, well, maybe a little bit before that, but basically there's that period. A lot of time transpires during the first couple of chapters of The Lord of the Rings, mm-hmm. between Bilbo's birthday party and his leaving and Frodo's departure to the Shire. And as Gandalf's suspicions about the ring grow, one of the things he does is he goes and tries to find Gollum, thinking that you know, if he can understand how Gollum came to possess the ring and how long he possessed it, that would give him an insight. And when they finally catch up to him, they find out that he actually doesn't leave the roots of the mountain for quite a while.
Uh-huh.
And when he does finally leave, he kind of follows along Bilbo's path, that he goes and he spies around like Lake Town and those kinds of places, and kind of starts piecing together who this Baggins was, where he's from, that kind of stuff. But eventually he's drawn toward Mordor, and that's where he gets captured, and everything he knows is forced out of him, and that's how Sauron comes to learn of hobbits and the Shire and whatnot. So one thing they could do maybe is speed up the timeline on Gollum's leaving the mountains, and have him follow along in the wake of the party, and maybe be sneaking around in Lake Town while they're in Lake Town, or maybe have him show up in Lake Town right after they've left for the mountain or something.
Well, and you could create some scenes where, you know, there's some interaction between Gollum and the people along the journey. You know, it doesn't have to be from Tolkien's writings, but I can imagine that if he starts to follow Bilbo and tries to piece together what happened, and showing his inner turmoil, because of this affects Gollum tremendously. And even in The Lord of the Rings, he's probably already kind of used to the fact that he is no longer in possession of the ring, but it's still very fresh in the timeline of The Hobbit. So he must be going through hell, basically, because he's been with the ring for so long, and then this ring getting stolen from him, basically, that is a very interesting premise to, again, give us some of those brilliant scenes. I love those scenes in The Lord of the Rings where you see this inner dialogue between Sméagol and Gollum, and this anger, and this kind of, he's torn and split in two, basically. I think that they could actually do that in The Hobbit as well and show perhaps his decline into, I don't know, total depression or anger, or him trying to use anything that's in his power to find out where the ring went and how he can get back into possession of the ring. I don't know. I can totally see some extra scenes being added to the story, and it will be another story thread as well visually. You know, if we have the story of Bilbo and his companionship, we've got the story of the battle and the Sauron and everything, and then another visual aspect to kind of break up the movie and add some extra narrative material would be the journey of Gollum in pursuit of the ring. I don't know.
That's pretty interesting. Very interesting speculation.
Well, but that's what you know.
The listeners are going to love this. This is the stuff they love to hear on this show. Our rampant speculation.
I don't know. Perhaps they're just yelling at their iPod or iPhones. Like, end it already!
Even
all this
they're yelling,
totally
they're engaged.
Unfounded speculation. Come on, give us some some facts.
In fact, I think the less evidence we have for it, the more they like it.
I love speculating. I just wish that we had a little bit more to work with. Like, I don't know, like spy photos or something like that. Give us some more. I want to see some of the excitement around this production. And I feel that they're actually being too closed right now. We need some spy stuff. I need to have fresh material. And please, make it more than just a photo on a tote bag, because that's not doing it for me. I don't know. I mean, we know more about the iPhone 5 than we know about The Hobbit. this is not right. Oh well. Here's another story. Lord of the Rings stars fight it out for Fantastic Fest. What is this? Is this about gaming?
Okay, so Fantastic Fest is a film convention that is held every year. I believe it's held every year in Austin, Texas. I think it's sponsored by the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, which is this kind of famous theater there. They've done things like I believe they did an entire marathon, a marathon of all the Harry Potter films when the last Harry Potter film came out and stuff. So it's a really cool place for people that love films, the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema. I have a friend that lives there.
Cool.
And he says it's really cool. But anyway, Fantastic Fest is a genre film festival. It's largely focused on horror and those kinds of things, but not entirely. It's also got fantasy and a few other things that are sort of considered, you know, genre films. Mm-hmm. So every year they have a thing they do called the Fantastic Debates. And what they do is they try to get a couple of people who do a debate about some kind of random topic related to genre film. So mm-hmm. for example, this year they had a couple of people, I'm trying to remember who did it. They had a couple of people debate NASA. I think they had, they had a guy, I think a physicist who used to work for NASA mm-hmm. debating how NASA's good versus some guy, a critic of NASA, arguing that NASA was bad. And they did a few other debates, and one of the ones they had was they pitted Elijah Wood versus Dominic Monaghan debating World of Warcraft. And I guess they were just arguing about whether it's good or not.
Wow.
You know, basically these are just weird, completely meaningless debates, but they're fun.
That's very geeky. So who was in favor of World of Warcraft?
I believe Dominic Monaghan was arguing in favor of it, because there's a quote here that says there's something like 12 million people playing World of Warcraft at any given time, the biggest online gaming community in the world. So I feel that 12 million people must be doing something right. So I think he was in favor of it.
Okay.
And what's interesting about these debates is they're always two parts. There's a debate, and then they finish with a boxing match.
No way, a real boxing match?
Yes.
Oh my god.
There's on the austin.ynn.com link that I put in the notes, they actually have a video of these guys duking it out.
You're kidding me. That is awesome.
So Dominic Monaghan and Elijah Wood beat the crap out of each other after arguing.
Holy moly. Actually, yeah, I'm going to play this video right now. I've not seen this yet. I hope there's not a loud commercial. Oh, of course there is.
There's
always
is
a commercial in front of these clips nowadays. But, wow. That is actually pretty risky, because Elijah Wood needs to still do some filming, so he can't break his nose.
The stars were out at Fantastic Fest
right.
Saturday night. Former Hobbits Elijah Wood and Dominic Monaghan faced off in the square ring. First came the debate, then came the smackdown. The debate was over whether World of Warcraft is a waste of time.
I mean, there's something like 12 million people playing World of Warcraft at any given time, the biggest online gaming community in the world. So I feel like 12 million people must be doing something right.
I don't really want to exist in a space and talk to my friends. I'd rather shoot people on Call of Duty and do that the very same thing.
Ooh.
The fight was just as fierce as the debate, but in the end, there could only be one winner. And it was up to the crowd to decide. They picked Dominic Monaghan. He walked away with the prize. You can see more Fantastic Fests through Thursday.
That looks actually like a real fight. I mean, they're not pretending. They're really beating the heck out of each other. Wow. Oh, we got a link to this video in the show notes for those of our listeners that haven't seen it yet. But oh my goodness. So Elijah Wood is more of a Call of Duty guy.
I can get you links. They did some fun videos leading up to it, promoting it, where they were antagonizing each other.
Oh, really?
Stuff, so.
Oh, wait a second, I can't find those. Are those in the notes as well, or
no, I'm gonna add them in afterward for
okay
you.
Cool, very cool. And then our final story of the day, and I'm excited about this. There is a deal for the Hobbit toys. Of course this needs to happen. We need to have toys, or at least we are you know, little nephews, they need to have toys, Hobbit toys. And apparently Warner Brothers has now struck a deal. But who is going to make these toys?
It is this company called The Bridge Direct. So Warner Brothers Consumer Products awarded The Bridge Direct Incorporated the master toy license for Peter Jackson's The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, and The Hobbit, There and Back Again.
Wow. So it's not.
I have no
the,
idea who this is, The Bridge Direct, by
me
the way.
Me neither. Isn't Who does all the Star Wars toys? Is that that's this big American company that does all these figurines and action figures? Gosh,
I don't know.
Help me out here. Star Wars toys. Let me just Google that real quickly. Hasbro. Hasbro is the
That's right, yeah.
The biggest company, but so yeah, light bridge. I need to Google that. I hear the sound of our jingle in the background, which means that we're gonna wrap up this this train wreck. and I'm just talking about my participation, my contribution to the show, not about Dave, of course. But Dave, just to, you know, in our final minutes, do we have some fan news? Something.
Sure, yeah. Around the community, there's a fun video of a Lord of the Rings flash mob in San Diego that folks should go search for. Maybe we can dump that in the notes.
Sure.
There is this Saturday. One thing that's really exciting is, actually, let's do Friday first. This Friday at New York, as a part of New York Comic Con, the OneRing.net's going to be there, and they're doing a Ringers Take Manhattan party Friday night. I think registration's probably closed, but it might not be, so go check if you live in that area. And Corey Olson, the Tolkien professor, will be there, so it could be a good chance to go meet him.
Ringers Saturday, are fans of the Lord of the Rings, right?
What were you saying?
Ringers, that's the kind of the name for the fans of the Lord of the Rings, isn't it?
Yeah, well, specifically for the OneRing.net fans.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Yep. Sorry, I was interrupting you.
Oh, no, it's all right. And then Saturday, October 15th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, U.S. Time, Middle Earth Network Radio is going to be doing a live interview with Douglas Gresham, the stepson of C.S. Lewis.
Holy moly. Wow. Yep. That is awesome. Is he into writing also?
Yeah, and I think he's sort of a biographer, and he's been involved in the production of the Narnia films and a lot of that stuff.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, I think he's quite similar in a way to Christopher Tolkien in that he continues to be involved in his stepfather's legacy. So
and what was the time again, and where can we listen to that?
Oh, that would be on Middle Earth Network Radio. Go to mymeradio.us, mymeradio.us is the short link that'll take you there. It's on the Middle Earth Network radio page on mymiddleearth.com. And it's this Saturday, October 15th, and it's at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is our show for today. I just Googled this toy company, Bridge Direct, and... you know that's the toy company that makes the Justin Bieber dolls?
Oh, Lord.
There was this whole controversy about Justin Bieber changing his hairstyle, and they had already made a gazillion puppets toys for Christmas, and then they had to remanufacture them because of the different hairstyle. I think Justin Bieber caused them to lose like millions of dollars. So that's perhaps why they were so eager to get the Hobbit contract. Because we know one thing, and that is that Hobbits always have the same hair. Both on their head and on their toes. All right. Well, thank you for listening. You can find more of our shows on sqpn.com, and that's also where you will find our Amazon link. Remember that if you do your purchases at Amazon. Dave, thank you for joining me today. We will be back soon with another episode of Secrets of the Hobbit with more news from New Zealand and more news about The Hobbit. Thanks for listening.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.
And it's